Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Dearborn, Michigan, and Fort Riley, Kansas, and earned a bachelor's degree in business administration from Grand Valley State University, and a master's of public administration from Harvard University. After working as a commercial lender for 10 years, he was elected to the Michigan House of Representatives in 2006. Since 2011, he's been the lieutenant governor of the state of Michigan, and he's been a champion for advocacy for people with autism and their families. His name? Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're with the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Michigan, Brian Kelly. Brian, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Jack, it's really a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks. Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents, please?
Well, I've spent most of my life here in Michigan, with the exception of a few years when my dad was in the Army and we were stationed out at Fort Riley, Kansas. But originally from southwest Detroit, Dearborn Heights, in that area, and eventually settled, though, in the central part of the state near Lansing, where I did most of my growing up. You know, I went to Michigan State from there and went into the banking profession, and I made business loans eventually. But I started out in the mailroom, working on the teller line, did just about every job in that bank as I worked my way up. But at that time, Michigan was really in the midst of that lost decade. And as I saw our state heading in the wrong direction, I decided, rather than just complain about it, I needed to get involved and try to change the direction of our state.
What's the biggest thing, Lieutenant Governor, you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
Well, with my mom, it's about compassion. My mom is a person who really knows how to unconditionally love people, to give second chances, very redemption-minded, the type of person where just forgiveness is where she's at. She's really taught me how to care for people. And with my dad, it's hard work. My dad's a doctor. He worked his way through school and joined the Army to pay for it, to make it possible. But an old-fashioned doctor, to spend time with people, that people show up at the house and he'd say, I can't remember a Thanksgiving or a Christmas where he wasn't seeing people in the kitchen because you know, people needed help, and he was a doctor and his job was to help them. You know, just the idea of your work is bigger than yourself, and putting everything that you have into it. So they were great. They have been and continue to be great examples to live life by.
You mentioned that you had a 10-year career as a commercial lender. What did that chapter in your life teach you?
Well, there are entrepreneurs out there that are doing amazing and exciting things. And that was really my inspiration to get involved in the public policy level, is because I saw innovators in our communities that were out there doing amazing things, taking these ideas and turning them into opportunities. And yet I saw a state that kept on going down and an economic development strategy was like, how do you convince somebody from someplace else to come in here and save us? When I saw, I thought the approach needed to be build success around the people that are already here, create a better environment for success. And so I saw that in commercial lending, that the entrepreneurship, the innovation, the determination, the hard work and perseverance that entrepreneurs have, that's our best bet going forward. And that proved to be true.
I agree with a lot of things that President Trump says. I thought that State of the Union a few weeks ago was terrific. One thing he said was that when he was in business is about the head, and government, he's learned now, is about the heart. I believe that business is also about the heart. Talk about entrepreneurs giving back to the community, etc.
You know, all across our state, the business owners are the community leaders, just like There are teachers that are community leaders and police officers that are community leaders. And I see business owners that are really taking good care of their communities. In fact, in the town where I live, there's a circle of business people that they just seem to always be there when the community needs something, when something needs to be sponsored, or there's something that needs to happen, to be there to get it started. And so from small towns like where I live to big towns like Detroit, you see that this partnership now between business and philanthropy and city and state governments that are coming together to make things happen. And that leadership from the business world, I think, has been really, really important.
Okay, let's go to 2005. You decide you're going to run for the Michigan House of Representatives. Maybe your wife Julie said okay, but her parents said, "What's wrong? should have never married this guy." Why did you ever decide to do it?
Well, Julie is she's amazing. We've been married for 21 years now, and she is she would support me no matter what. But when we decided, when we made this decision to move forward, we knew it was a big lifestyle change to go from banking to serving in the state legislature, which was the first office, the first state-level office that I ever ran for. And it was really about the economic direction of our state. I saw innovators and small businesses and creating an environment of success around them as our best path forward, and I didn't see that appreciated at the state level. It seemed like the state level, they were always thinking, if we could just convince some other business from somewhere in the world to come in here, that'll save us. And that's, you know, it's good to try and convince people to come in from other places, but if you're not taking care of the ones that are already here, then you're never going to be successful with that strategy. So that was why I decided to run. There was we have people that are already on the ground here that if they have the environment for success, they will go out there and create opportunity for our communities and for our people.
All right. In 2009 and 2010, Lieutenant Governor, the Republican caucus was its smallest in 40 years. You were the minority. Tell us about those 2 years.
Well, that was having time, serving time in a minority caucus, I think, was an important perspective moving forward. It's really helped me to appreciate while it's frustrating, it's helped me now to appreciate the importance of having support to move policies forward. When I served in the minority in the House, it seemed like most of the job was trying to make bad things less bad, right? You just didn't have the votes to push the and develop the policies in the first place that you wanted, but sometimes you could somewhat impact the ones that were already moving. Now, once we turned over in the next term, when I became lieutenant governor and Rick Snyder became governor, it all changed. We have the numbers to actually pass things, good things, and reforms and changes that would move our state forward. But that was a very frustrating time period because our state kept on falling further and further. And the people in the political world, they seemed to, their strategy seemed to be hold on for one more year and hope the good times return, as opposed to realizing that the world has changed permanently, and we need to go out there and change in order to and reinvent our state in order to create a better future.
We're talking to Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly. When we come back, we'll ask him how it was that this guy from Ann Arbor, Rick Snyder, chose him to be his running mate. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, who was elected to the Michigan House of Representatives in 2006. All right, there's this nerd, you know, computer geek from Ann Arbor, Rick Snyder, decides to run. And he comes to you and he says, "Would you be my running mate?" How'd that happen?
Well, we had met before that point, actually become good friends. But if you think, the first time that I ever heard his name was in 2009. And we have a mutual friend. And this friend said, "Hey, there's this guy running for governor. You should meet him." And I said, "Who's that?" And he said, "Rick Snyder." And I said, "Who's that? I never heard of him." And he said, oh, yeah, he was the CEO of Gateway. He started Ann Arbor Spark. He's, venture capitalist, and you should meet him. And what I said at that time was, listen, I don't have time to meet a person who has no chance of winning. And so I actually said no. But then we were at a function together. And then we did meet, and we really kind of hit it off. And then we set up a meeting, and then we got together. We talked about tax policy, talked about some other things. And I walked away from that meeting. It was in a coffee shop. I walked away from that meeting thinking, you know, it's too bad he has no chance of winning, because I think he'd make a great governor. And we became friends after that point. And then later on, though, when he launched that One Tough Nerd ad in the Super Bowl of 2010, it really changed the conversation. He was on people's radar screen. And so, before, as we became closer and closer, as we became friends, as we started working on policy development things together as kind of a vetting source for his white papers, it just turned into something more like a partnership. And now I was running for Senate at that time. I won my primary. He ran for governor and surprised everybody and won that primary. I didn't have any clue at all that he was at that time considering me for lieutenant governor.
All right. Tell us about the campaign against Lansing Mayor Virge Bonaro and his running mate, Southfield Mayor Brenda Lawrence.
Well, that first campaign was in 2010. It was really a bigger question of tomorrow versus yesterday. Embrace the different type of future. I mean, Rick Snyder is a different type of candidate. Nobody had ever seen anything like him before. I mean, he came on, but he said, hey, it's time for a nerd. And that when you met him, that was kind of, in an endearing way, but it's like, yeah, this guy's kind of nerdy. And I tell you, nothing gets him as excited as a spreadsheet. I mean, he's really, really into that. But it was something different.
Those commercial lenders, nothing gets them more excited than
I know my way around spreadsheets too, and it's a that difference. It was like kind of classic old style politician versus something new and fresh and different. And our state was in such bad shape at the time that I think people were really ready for something very, very different. And so they gave him a shot. And what I loved about his campaign was that it was about Michigan's future, just relentlessly focused on the future. So many people like to argue about the past, like to point fingers about the past. And at that time, Michigan was in really bad shape. And there were a lot of people pointing fingers in a lot of different directions. What Rick Snyder says, hey, no credit, no blame. Let's just move forward together. And here's how we're going to do it. He laid out very specific plans, and those plans worked.
His spreadsheets that he was accustomed to had a lot of black numbers. As a commercial lender, you were focusing on spreadsheets with a lot of black numbers. What you came up against was a spreadsheet with a lot of red numbers. What's the biggest thing that 2010 campaign, Brian, taught you?
Well, it was really that you could win in a totally different type of an approach. I mean, you see so often, and it still happens today, there's the politics of divide. So in fighting, and people brag about fighting. People put right in their literature. They'll say, they say, I'm a fighter, or vote for me. I'll fight for you. I'll fight. So everything's about fighting. And what happens? They get elected and then they go fight. Right. And it's hard to get things done when everybody has a mindset of just fighting. What Rick Snyder showed and what that 2010 campaign showed, and then we showed it again in 2014 in the reelection, that it doesn't always have, you don't have to fight all the time. In fact, it shouldn't be about fighting. Our antenna should go up when somebody brags about fighting. Where else in your life do you value fighting so much? Right? If you're going to hire somebody as an employer, and the person's interviewing and they say, hey, hire me, I'm going to come in and fight with everybody. Right? You would never hire that person. If you're proposing to your girlfriend you want to get married, right? Would you get down on your knee and say, marry me, I fight a lot. Right? You would never. There's no place else in our life that we value fighting so much as in politics. And it's not that you don't fight hard for what you believe in, but it's about working to get things done. And you have to bring people together to get things done. That's what Rick showed. That's what he's done.
Lieutenant Governor, paint for us a picture of Michigan in January 2011.
January 2011, here's the shorthand. We were last on every list you want to be first on, and we were first on every list you want to be last on. Right? We led the nation in things like bankruptcies and unemployment and lost jobs and manufacturing jobs and lost income and all of these different areas in Detroit headed toward bankruptcy. I mean, that was where Michigan stood at that time. We couldn't get budgets balanced back then. There were two government shutdowns in the previous 4 years. There was a rainy day fund that would have only run – our rainy day fund – that's like the cushion in your checking account, right? Our rainy day fund, January 1st, 2011, would have run state government for a total of 32 minutes, right? It was a state living on the edge. Debt was going up, and there was, and yet there was this this inertia. There was this determination not to change, and so we started with the basics. Major tax reform and balancing the budget. Those were the two first things. And, you know, even though we had a super majority of Republicans in the Senate to get major tax reform done and take us from being 49th to 8th, according to the Tax Foundation, we were 49th in the country before, and now we're 8th. Major tax reform and then balancing the budget. I had to break the tie in the Senate for both of those things. But it had to be done. We had to move forward. We were looking at not just fixing Michigan, but reinventing Michigan and creating a better environment for success. Balancing the budget and major tax reform were the two first major components to that. Those happened in 2011, and we saw results in economic growth start almost immediately.
In early 2011, as you mentioned, you were the deciding vote on the elimination of the Michigan business tax. In hindsight, was that a good decision?
It was absolutely the right decision. It was something that sent a message to the rest of the nation that things were changing in Michigan, that we were committed to reinventing ourselves, that we weren't going to accept being last on every list, that we were, that's not our place, that's not who we are, it's not where we come from. I mean, Michigan was at one time the economic center of the universe, and we have an attitude, had an attitude even back then in the depths of the recession, and Michigan was more like a depression, that we could get back, that we have the type of state that has everything that we need in order to be successful. We just have to look at it, approach it in a different way. So that was a major statement. We were 49th in the country. We're second worst in all of America, and now we're a top 10 state. That was a critical change. And now, 7 years later, we're up 540,000 new jobs.
Let's talk about right to work. First, what does right to work mean?
Well, right to work is a policy that simply says that a person cannot be required as a condition of their employment to join or pay dues to an organization. So, and for Michigan, for a long time, if an organization was unionized, then you could not be hired by that company unless you either join the union or pay dues to the union. And so that law said you can't make that as a condition of an employment. Unions provide service, employment services. And just like any other service entity, the philosophy behind it was that a union should have to earn that business, that people should pay the union because they want to, not because they're compelled to as a condition of their employment.
All right. The opponents of that said, if this happens, the world's going to end, then wages are going to go down, and companies are going to let more experienced workers go and go for younger, cheaper workers. Didn't that happen?
It did not happen. In fact, quite the opposite happened. It was a part of several things: tax reform, balancing the budget, regulatory reform, passing right to work, all of these things accumulating to creating this environment for success where there's more job growth, more demand for people. You know, back in 2011, their biggest problem was no jobs. Right, there just weren't enough jobs. But today, whether you're in Detroit or you're in Marquette, you'll hear the same thing, which is companies saying, I can't find enough people to fill all these jobs I'm creating. And so it's causing wages to go up. We do see wage growth now. We're top 10 in the nation in wage growth here in Michigan. We are our unemployment rate hit a 17-year low, and we're up over 500,000 new jobs. I mean, this is a really big sea change in Michigan for the better. We've built such a strong foundation, and that's what's so exciting, because we could go anywhere from here.
We're talking to Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, who's been our Lieutenant Governor since 2011. Lieutenant Governor, you're known as an expert in tax policy. What are your thoughts on President Trump's recent tax cuts?
You know, I know that the political system used it like a political football, but there are some really, and some people were trying to paint it as a very bad thing, but it's not. It's something that's really going to help our country and our state move forward. First of all, just the average family of four. So take your typical family of four here in the state of Michigan. They'll pay a little over $2,000 less in taxes every single year. That will have a big impact on the average family. That's a lot of money. That's a big difference. But at the same time, there's corporate tax reform. Two main changes that happened there. There was a lowering of the rates. We used to be the highest in the whole world of all developed countries, and now it put us at a much more competitive level. And we saw immediately bonuses being paid to employees and benefits being increased and wage being increased. This is a difference that not only are families saving on their taxes, companies passing off savings to families and workers. And then on top of that, it hasn't been talked about a lot yet, but there's a lot of capital that has been trapped overseas for a long time. So a company maybe made money overseas. They had to pay taxes in another country on that money. And if they bring it back into America, they had to pay a really substantial tax burden in order to bring it back in. So what our tax policy was doing is it was forcing U.S. companies that are located in the U.S., to continue investing their money overseas, and that's not right. And so they made changes in tax policy that I think will result in an infusion of investment capital from all over the world back into our country.
Some say that repatriated money amounts to $3 to $4 trillion. DTE, just a couple weeks ago, announced because of the tax cut, we're going to give every one of our customers a 3% discount.
And Consumers Energy, the other incumbent utility in our state, also announced that they will be passing on their tax savings to the ratepayers. And so it's showing up in a lot of different ways in a lot of different areas. So while I know that there was a big political argument over tax reform, I think as it gets implemented, people are going to come to the realization that is a very good thing for Michigan, a very good thing for America.
We're talking to Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, and he and his wife, Julie, have three children. At times, Julie will say she has four children, three that listen and one curmudgeon that won't ever change. And your daughter, Reagan, a certain thing happened in the legislature one day that changed her life, your life, and tens of thousands of families' lives in Michigan. Tell us about what happened one day.
Well, I have three kids, and I remember when my son was born, our first child. By the time he got to be 2 years old, I thought, why do people say terrible twos? This is easy. Like, they must be doing it wrong. You know, that it just everything came really easy. And then my daughter was born, my daughter Reagan, our second child, and you know, things tended to be a lot harder. Simple things that used to be simple, just going to the store, getting dressed when it's cold outside, putting gloves on, that sort of thing. Everything was really hard. And there had to be like an order of things. The right-hand glove had to go on before the left hand. And if it happened backward, it would really result in we call them a meltdown, like a really big problem. And so we couldn't figure out, like, what is happening here? you know, and it was one day when I was in the legislature and health policy committee, listening to testimony about autism. There was this this young man. He was, I think, about 11 years old at the time. He was sitting next to his mother, and he was reading his testimony. And this child had autism. And what he was doing was he was describing what his life was like before he got ABA therapy. And it just hit me. What he was describing sounded just like my daughter. And so that was kind of just sitting there in health policy committee in the legislature, this question that we were trying to figure out when she was 2 and when she was 3 and when she was 4, that everything was so hard, and we knew we weren't meeting her needs and we couldn't figure it out. And then it was when the light bulb went off, she has autism. And I didn't even know anything about autism, really. I mean, I supported autism insurance reform based on the financial case, right? It made good sense. You help people earlier and they're more independent later on, so it's like an investment. But I didn't really know a lot about what autism was. And then a few years later, I found out that my daughter has autism, and it was it's been a growth experience for all of us. She's amazing. She teaches us something new every day. She's taught us to be better parents, for sure, of all of our kids. And she's also in the world of citizen legislators, you take your experience, you bring that to the table to make change or affect change for the rest of the state. I could see that there were a lot of problems and areas where, you know, somebody like me, I could make sure that my daughter got what she needed. But you shouldn't have to be the lieutenant governor to make sure that your kids get what they need. And so that's why I decided to take it up as a cause. And it really expanded from there. All developmental disabilities, mental illnesses, addiction, basically, and other types of disabilities as well. But a particular focus on brain care. When somebody has a disorder of the brain or a difference in the way that their neurological system works, there's a stigma associated with it. The life outcomes usually are not very good, and that's, we can't accept that.
Dad, I've been doing this show for 13 years. Every time I've had a guest who's had a special needs child, they refer to that child as their hero, their teacher, their inspiration, their gift from God. Brian Kelly, why is that?
Well, you really do learn to appreciate the things that you realize how many things you take for granted. Small things. It's, give you just kind of an example, right? So it's always a big deal when a child says their first words, right? It's a big deal. Everybody, you know, you celebrate it, and it's this thing. Well, with a child with autism, sometimes you never get those first words. That is, but when you do, sometimes you do. It's huge. You know, it's hard to even imagine. So my daughter said words, but she wasn't able to use words in ways to meet needs, not use words in functional ways. So she might be able to repeat a word, but not use words to ask for something, and just not kind of making that connection. And I'll never forget, you know, we had gotten into ABA therapy and they were helping her, and she had a cartoon she was watching called Little Einsteins, and they had this saying they would say, "We need more power." That was just this line they had in every episode. And it was when they were in trouble and they were taking off in the spaceship, "We need more power." And so my daughter one time was trying to get a popsicle out of the freezer, and she couldn't reach it. She wasn't supposed to be getting her own popsicle anyway, but she was reaching and stretching, and she could almost reach the popsicle, and she said, "We need more power." That was the first time that I had ever seen her use words in a way that was functional, right? Use words to try and meet a need, not just repeating a word that she heard, but to use it. It was so, it was flooring. Like, and so you can, in some ways, you have to let go of a future that you thought, or how you thought your future and your family's future is going to look, and learn to embrace something different. And you don't know what it's going to be, right? You just embrace the unknown. You embrace potential. And in Reagan's case, it was, you know, sometimes I think before, just living life and missing the important things. And she teaches us to recognize the difference between busyness and urgent things, and instead what is important.
We're talking to a lieutenant governor, a special dad, a very proud dad, Brian Kelly. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly. Brian, you've toiled in the business world for 10-plus years, and the last 12, you've served in public service. What's the same and what's different?
Well, there are a lot of differences for sure. It seems like there's politics everywhere in the world, I suppose, but you have to work a lot harder on getting the politics out of the decisions that are made in government, because it's kind of in the middle of the political world. And that's really important, because we owe our citizens decisions that are logical and real, not just political solutions to things, but real solutions. So as we approach problem solving, it's define the problem, look at all of the different possibilities of solving that problem, pick the best option, the best solution, and then implement it. Then after all of that stuff is done, then deal with the politics of whatever that ramifications in the politics of that decision. That's the right way to do it. Unfortunately, in the political world, there's this tendency to try and do things backwards, to let politics determine which problems you can even talk about, what the possible solutions are and how you implement them. So we've changed that here in Michigan, and I hope that it continues in the future.
As lieutenant governor these past 7 years, what have you learned about the people of Michigan?
Michiganders are so resilient. And when it came to a time when our state had really been through such a horrible decade, that lost decade, where a whole generation of kids went to another place, yet still there was this gritty determination to build a different future. That showed up more in the Detroit bankruptcy process than what I've ever seen anywhere else in my whole life, where it was, you know, at that point when it became clear that that was where Detroit was headed and that process was needed in order to move forward. It would have been easy to get stuck there, and yet there was this determination where Detroiters were like, no, this is not who Detroit is. This is a turning point. Leadership. It was the leadership of our governor and Kevin Orr on the front end with our team and the administration. But then it transitioned right into to Mike Duggan and the fantastic job that he's done in carrying things forward in the city of Detroit. And that's that type of determination to build a better future is something that is inherent in our DNA here in Michigan. And I think no matter good times or bad times in our future, as long as we focus on our people, we're going to be okay.
A few months ago, you announced you want to run for governor. The pundits, many of them say, that's an uphill battle. Schneider did it, but it's a different thing. Different time. Why did you decide to run for governor?
You know, it's interesting. The pundits seem to always be wrong, so you almost have to just write that off. But there's here's the thing. Our people are very, very fiercely independent. They don't like a political system, politicians, pundits telling them who they should vote for. They're going to make up the decision on their own. And so this is a wide open race. I decided to run because our state has come so far. We have built this foundation, a strong foundation, with 540,000 new private sector jobs with a 17-year low in unemployment. We went from being the worst in the nation in job loss to being sixth best overall and number one in manufacturing job growth, top 10 in income growth in our state now, too. Our business climate went from 40th to 12th. We actually are 10th now in 25 to 34-year-olds. I mean, who would have thought that was possible? In the State of the Union, when the president wanted to give an example of a state or of a city where things were going well, he said Detroit. Who would have thought that was possible 10 years ago? I mean, there's so many things happening in our state. I want to continue this comeback. I want to build on this strong foundation and take Michigan to the next level, to literally make us the most prosperous state in all of America.
Why are you the right person to do that?
I've got both the experience in making this happen, being a partner with Rick Snyder along the way in this extraordinary comeback of Michigan, where we are seeing job growth to the extent of the biggest complaint we hear from employers is not enough people to fill all these jobs, but also the plans for the future. I may have been the last major candidate to get in this race, but I'm the only one that has a detailed plan for the future. And it's really about our people. It's to have the best K-12 system in the country. We should shoot for number one. That's what our kids deserve. And if we get that right, it'll build our best future. Make sure that every kid gets a good education. You're going to beat poverty. You're going to beat crime in the future. You're going to own the economic success of the future. We will be that center if every kid gets a great education. It's bringing back skilled trades. 100,000 more. The pipeline, I think, needs to be big enough to fill 100,000 more skilled trades positions just in the next few years. And then we need to transform our social services to help people get back in the game, get them back in the workforce instead of just maintaining them at a place of dependence. These are really important aspects. If we invest in our people, we are going to have a bright future in Michigan.
As our time winds down this evening, what advice, Lieutenant Governor, would you give to our young listeners?
Well, for young people, it's to really explore what you're passionate about and put your whole self into it. And if you haven't found what that is, keep looking, right? I mean, take chances to go out there and really find your passion and set your course in that direction. And when you do that, when you love what you do, working hard comes naturally. When you love what you do, doing a great job comes naturally. And so that's working hard and making sure that you find your spot where you can make a difference. That's where I like to put my faith in the future. It's in the strength of our people.
Lieutenant Governor, from all of the people of the state on both sides of the aisle, thanks for all the hard work that you've done this past 7+ years.
Thanks, Jack. It's been a pleasure to be on the show.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.